Good morning. I'm Nancy Williams. Happy to be here with you today. And I was just thinking the other day, as I heard a woodpecker tap, tap, tapping all over my house again, that it would probably be convenient or interesting to me at least to find out why they did that. And in the course of finding out why they did that, I stumbled upon this marvelous little essay. The title of it is When Good Woodpeckers Go Bad. And I thought, well, I'm a birder, and so this, I've liked woodpeckers, still do like woodpeckers, but they can do damage, and so I thought I would share it with you. I will tell you in advance, there's really no solution to it. We just have to get used to it, but you can try to get rid of them in sort of humane ways if you want. I guess maybe misery is the best company. Anyway, this little essay comes from a book called Rare Encounters with Ordinary Birds by Leanda Lynn Haupt. And she was the education director of the Seattle Audubon Society in the late 1990s and has taught ornithology and bird watching extensively in the Seattle and Portland areas. She's also a raptor rehabilitator, but I don't think she's ever had to rehabilitate a woodpecker. Anyway, to go forward, Leanda writes, "It's been over a year since I left my job at the Seattle Audubon Society. Still, it is full-fledged springtime, and I almost expect my home phone to start ringing off the hook, just as my office phone once did at this time of year. For a brief few weeks each spring, every other call to Seattle Audubon, and I'm sure this is the case for other local chapters as well, is a woodpecker call, and somehow I became the organization's de facto one-woman woodpecker response team. Because I was the education coordinator, and this was considered a public education issue, most of the calls got funneled my way. All of the callers had just one thing to say, and say loudly, 'A woodpecker is destroying my house.' I would give the caller some time to blow off steam before attempting to respond. 'Yes, destroying it, banging loudly and endlessly all day, can't sleep, can't chase it away.' And typically there was an implied, if not an overt, question, 'What are you going to do about that?' As if it was altogether possible that I could pop over driving an Audubon woodpecker relief mobile. And what? Reason with the bird, perhaps? Relocate him? Pull out my Audubon Society pellet gun and send him on the path to glory? This last option was not always so far from the mind of the disgruntled homeowner. From the little tally that I kept on a notepad, I counted that roughly one quarter of the total springtime woodpecker callers asked whether they were allowed to shoot the bird themselves. Happily, the legal answer rested squarely on the side of woodpecker longevity. It is true, though, that this time of year woodpeckers go absolutely nuts. They are not alone. The male birds of many species are hit with a wild hormone boost, putting them in the mood for avian romance. They have two primary closely related goals, to define and defend a territory and to attract an excellent and willing mate. Noise is one of the best avenues to both ends. For passerine species, the songbirds, spring is the reason for rhapsodizing ceaselessly from the highest branches, and though both male and female birds vocalize, it is the males who sing. I once heard folk singer Linda Waterfall translate the male's spring song, quote, 'I'm a hot date and a good provider. I'm a hot date and a good provider.' This is a workable rendering. The song has a dual audience potential, female mates and would-be marauding males. The angle on the song is somewhat fluid depending on the moment in the nesting cycle. Late in the season, presumably, the bird has already mated, and his song helps to maintain the pair bond and to reiterate territorial command. Woodpeckers, however, aren't songbirds. They have ringing calls, but they're not memorable singers. In lieu of song, woodpeckers become astonishing, loud, and unforgettable in their own special way. Bills poised and ready, male and female woodpeckers both, begin a spring symphony of loud drumming, rap-rap-rapping their strong bills against anything that will produce the desired effect. Drumming posts are selected and used repeatedly during the season. The posts being chosen, it appears, for their instrumental quality and amplitude. A hollow tree is good, but not as good as your metal storm drain. A northern flicker is the most often encountered suburban woodpecker. Fawn brown and black spotted, flickers have dark, wide-set eyes and an inquisitive, dolphin-like expression. There are two forms of northern flicker, which were once considered separate species, the yellow-shafted and red-shafted flickers, named according to the color of their wing linings. Eastern birds display yellow underwings in flight. Here in the west, they're orange vermilion. In both cases, the colors glow. The wings are the most obvious, but not the only difference. William Leon Dawson was appalled upon overhearing Easterners visiting the West referring to resident flickers by one of the colloquial names used for birds in their region. In his lovably high-minded style, Dawson wrote in 1909, "Thoughtless people often call the flickers of Washington yellow hammers, quite regardless of the fact that the western flicker is no longer yellow but orange-red. Such an oversight is unpardonable," unquote. Beyond the underwing differences, the forms are further distinguished by the male's raindrop-shaped mustachial stripes, red in the red-shafted, black on the yellow-shafted. The eastern birds also have a bright red crescent on their napes. There's a stable hybrid zone in the United States where nearly all the birds seen are reliable integrations of red and yellow-shafted flickers. The flicker's relationship to the suburban landscape is more complicated than it seems on the surface. Less dependent on purely forested habitat than many woodpeckers, flickers appear to adapt nicely to the suburban landscape, like your backyard. Open areas are necessary for optimal flicker foraging, a need well met by nicely planted residential lawns. But suburbs also remove much of the nesting substrate for these birds, which prefer to raise their young in natural cavities. In the neighborhoods, contact with starlings means increased competition for nest sites. For the moment, flickers are common, though it is not odd for the uninitiated to see flickers every day without even realizing they're in the company of a woodpecker. Flickers are the most terrestrial of the North American woodpecker species. In a most unwoodpeckerly fashion, flickers will be seen walking across suburban backyards, much like a robin, seeking insect meals and favoring ants in particular. Flickers hang from tree trunks, too, like good woodpeckers should, and they share all of the proper woodpecker adaptations for scaling trees and eating insects. Woodpeckers have two toes pointing forward and two back. For sure, gripping of vertical trunks. They have pointed, stiffened tail feathers that are resistant to the wear received when used as props against a tree. They have astonishingly long tongues that wrap all the way around the back of their skulls, across their foreheads, and between their eye sockets, attaching at the top base of the bill. These tongues, which are also barbed and sticky, pick ants easily and can be extended into holes that the bird has excavated in search of insects or wood-boring grubs. Most important, woodpeckers have expanded brain cases, allowing for space and cushioning between the brain and the skull. If we humans wrapped our bills against a tree with the force of a woodpecker, our brains would be liquefied in less than a minute. The fact that northern flickers are common and readily observed will ideally only increase interest in their extraordinary animated selves. Flickers have terrific personality. They call, they yak, they peer, they hop. They perform mating dances with much prehistoric wagging of the head, and they tend to all manner of flicker details in the course of a busy day, and they don't mind if you watch. A yellow-shafted bird is credited with inspiring one of the most famous careers in modern birding, a story the late Roger Torrey Peterson loved to recount. As an angst-ridden young soul of 12, Roger happened across a soft heap of dead-looking brown feathers, and when he reached for them, they burst forth in a wild fury of color and vitality. As he tells it, this was the most significant moment of his life, turning him toward a professional life built around birds. Flickers are championship drummers. They will spend some time and effort seeking a post that produces the most possible noise. and will stick with the favored spot for the entire drumming season. Houses sided in aluminum are great. So are metal chimneys, and even houses that lack a great deal of metal might have gutters or a nice thump to the cedar shakes. But it's here that most recipients of woodpecker house wrapping attentions go awry in their thinking. Even if the bird is drumming on pure wood, it is highly unlikely that much destruction is going on. Sure, the flicker could peck your house to bits if it wanted to. It could bore your wood siding full of holes, and if a woodpecker is feeding from your house, then woodpeckers are the least of your problems. You probably have rotten wood and a termite infestation. But destruction is not the flicker's purpose. Your house is a noisemaker, most likely not a restaurant. And the behavior is, if not soothing, at least temporary. If you're more worried about your own sleep than the reproductive success of the neighborhood woodpecker, here are some simple steps you can take. Most birds, woodpeckers included, avoid things like streamers moving in the breeze. You might hang a windsock or a plastic garbage bag cut into strips near the bird's favored drumming site. You could also reduce your home's noise potential. Cover the drumming area with a temporary layer of foam. The need for aesthetically unappealing measures such as these will be short-lived, since by earliest summer the flicker will have no further use for your home. They will be too busy bringing food to their tiny featherless woodpecker young. But it could surely be argued that these anti-woodpecker measures do not represent the higher ground. The flicker is dropping a singular opportunity in front of our faces, and if we keep our wits about us, we might take a step towards something more rare and wild than our everyday life typically affords. Untamed woodpeckers courting and mating on our simple rooftops. Here is much to learn. Forget early morning sleep. Put off reading boring books that require noiseless concentration. After all, even the 1995 Space Shuttle Discovery mission was delayed several weeks by yellow-shafted flickers, which in the throes of biological imperative drummed 6 dozen small holes in the foam insulation of Discovery's brownish-red external fuel tanks. Most of us don't even have a launching schedule. Why not relax and enjoy our part in the cycles of nature, resting happily in the knowledge that a cavity nest filled with fluffy woodpecker babies was helped into existence by the resonant capacities of our own domicile? The family of freshly fledged woodpeckers will grace your yard later this summer. The only thing cuter than a flicker is a baby flicker. You can watch the parents nonchalantly demonstrate how to find ants most effectively, how to balance ear and eye. Soon the young will stand up straighter. You will be less able to tell them by their hunched postures and bad landings. These first-year birds will disperse, becoming wild things of their own with adult lives. The young might practice a few taps in the fall, not mature drumming yet, nothing terribly impressive, but watch for them next spring. Next spring, they'll be ready. This was an essay by Leanda Lynn Haupt in the book Rare Encounters with Ordinary Birds. I'm Nancy Williams. Thanks for listening, and I will see you soon. Bye-bye.